Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Eleanor Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. This evening, we talk about the learning challenges that face educators, school administrators, speech and language therapists, parents, to help maximize the potential of children with learning disabilities through excellence in education. My guests this evening are devoted to that mission to maximize the potential of children with learning disabilities through excellence in education and instilling a sense of self-confidence in who they are. My guests this evening are Donna Henry, the head of the Hillside School, grades K through 8, which offers an opportunity for children with learning disabilities to have a successful learning experience, building skills that will last a lifetime. She holds a Master of Education in Learning Disabilities. And my other wonderful guest is Rick Lavoie, an award-winning speaker who will be present at the ArtsQuest Center Steel Sacks on Friday, October 11th, talking about secrets to turning on the tuned-out child. He holds degrees in special education, has served as an adjunct professor, and visiting lecturer on the subject of learning disabilities. Welcome to WDIY, Donna Henry, head of the Hillside School, and Rick Lavoie, award-winning speaker.
Delighted to be with you, Ellie.
Let's start with Donna, who is the head of the school for Hillside School. How did you become involved with the learning disabilities and the Hillside School?
My first encounter with the Hillside School was way back in 1986. I had been teaching students with learning disabilities in near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and I was relocating to the area, and I was hired as the fifth classroom teacher at the Hillside School when they were still at the church in Emmaus before the actual building was built.
What made you become involved in learning disabilities per se? Because it wasn't very popular and back in 1986. It was we knew about special education, and children with learning disabilities weren't quite understood. They were thought of as children with special needs.
When I was in my graduate program, I have a degree in special education, but I specifically wanted to get my master's in learning disabilities because when initially working with those children in student teaching, I just was passionate about how wonderful it is to teach them, and it's very interesting how they learn, and I decided that's where I wanted to go, and I've been there ever since.
Well, we're glad that you're there, and we're glad that the Hillside School is there. Rick, how did you become interested in children with learning disabilities?
Well, I was fortunate. As Donna said, my undergraduate degree was in special education, and I was looking for a job when I got out of school, and I heard about this little independent school on the top of a mountain in Massachusetts, Eagle Hill School, that was beginning in 1972 to work with kids that we now identify as kids with learning disabilities. But these kids who were unable to deal with language, and yet most other things were pretty much intact. They had no, there was no brain damage, there was no sort of mental impairment, but they just couldn't deal with language. And it was really in the pioneer years. I learned an awful lot those years about how these kids function. And it was a residential school, so we really got a chance to be with the kids 24/7, putting them to bed at night and waking them up in the morning. And it was a tremendous experience, and it was then that I really realized this is where I was going to spend the next 40 years.
Well, it's interesting. I became interested in children with learning disabilities on two levels. One is a speech therapist working in the school system, and discovered that there were different levels of learning. And I was on my way to get a master's degree as a speech therapist and decided that, you know, the children are going to be fine. The people that really need the help are the parents to understand their children.
Exactly.
So I determined at that time, Rick, and I went on to get a master's in social work so that I could work with families.
You know, for years in my presentations, I used the slogan, learning disabilities, the real challenge is educating those who don't have one.
Right.
You know, we know how to work with a kid, and now we need to get to the parents, the teachers. I'm in the process of writing a book about grandparenting special needs kids. We need to get to the folks who deal with those kids every day and get them to understand. I think we've turned the corner on teaching the kid. Now we've got to get to the rest of the world.
I would agree.
I think you're right. Now, the National Education Association reports that we've got a motivation crisis in our schools. And they've reported that 2,000 high school teachers felt that 80% of their children were unmotivated or disengaged. And it appears that the methods we currently use to motivate kids are ineffective. And are they?
Well, I believe they are, and I think what's wrong is, and please, I'm not anti-teacher. I am one. I'm married to one. I love teachers. My five friends are teachers. But the problem is, in the last generation or so, I think what's happened insidiously is that teachers have turned the responsibility for motivation over to the student. So many times we hear teachers say, he's not learning because he's not motivated. And the argument that I make to teachers is a teacher saying, this child's not learning because he's not motivated, is much like a car salesman saying to his boss, I didn't sell any cars this month because he didn't have any motivated buyers. Well, that's part of your job, is to motivate the buyer. And I think what's happened insidiously is we've taken the responsibility for motivation and given it to the kids without realizing that motivation is really largely the job of the teacher. And it's the teacher's responsibility to get the child motivated, and then the child has to meet us halfway. But so it's more than just the methods we use. I think it's our basic approach and philosophy about motivation that's come up over the last couple of decades that's troubling to me.
Now, here's a problem. I'm not sure that everybody understands what learning disabilities are. Are these children with special needs? How do they differ from children with special needs? What makes and what do we mean by children with learning disabilities? Donna, Rick, who wants to take that?
Donna, you want this?
Sure. This is my life's mission, is to try to educate people to understand what a specific learning disability is. And I'm still educating my parents on that, of what kind of students I've taught the last 30 years. These students are just wonderful students, and why I'd like to teach them is because of their spirit. I mean, they're bright often. They're average, above average intelligence. They're gifted. They have many strengths, but at the same time, they have difficulty learning to read, difficulty learning to spell, difficulty having number sense in math, the act of writing or just getting ideas down on paper. It's not that they don't have wonderful ideas that are creative and thought provoking. Something gets lost when they have to write it down or learn in a traditional way.
Yeah, I think following up on that, I think that one of the ways I explain learning disabilities to the uninitiated is it's best defined by what it is not.
Right.
And that is to say, a child who's not functioning to his potential in school, mm-hmm. and yet he's not emotionally impaired, he's not mentally impaired,
right.
His vision is fine, his hearing is fine, and what's left is that child who's just not functioning because of a neurologically based problem. And I think we're frankly a generation away from really understanding it. There are several people out there who claim that they know why this happens, but I really don't think we fully understand it yet. And these kids need an extraordinarily special kind of education,
yes.
The kind that's offered at Hillside. And no one's asking me to say this, but I wonder if the folks in the Lehigh Valley realize how fortunate they are to have Hillside in their neighborhood, because not only do they serve the children that go to the school extraordinarily well, but they also have as part of their mission to reach out to the community and educate public school teachers and other independent school teachers and parents and professionals about the lives of these kids and more effective ways to teach them.
Now, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Take Charge of Your Life. This is your host, Eleanor Barbro, and this evening we're talking about children with learning disabilities, and particularly we're talking with Donna Henry, who is the head of the Hillside School, grades K through 8, and we're talking with Rick Lavoie, an award-winning speaker who will be present at the Arts Quest Center Steel Sacks on Friday, October 11th, talking about how to motivate the unmotivated child or the tuned-out child. And Hillside School is sponsoring that. And we were just talking about what is learning disabilities. I'd like to give an example. I have four children. One of my children had a learning disability, which was focused on inability to read. He really didn't learn to read until he was about 13, but it had nothing to do with his intelligence. It had to do with his inability to focus on the paper and to see a word in completeness. In order to learn how to read, you have to see the word the together, T-H-E. He saw T up in the corner of the paper, H in the middle, and E in the bottom. But he had a wonderful ability to absorb information through auditorily, through his ears. And if a teacher gave a wonderful lecture, he was able to remember everything, and still does to this day. And he went to college. He did not learn to read really the written word until he was about 12 or 13, but has gone to college and has a very fine position. And another son who read everything. He read everything all to... Did you finish your assignment? Of course I did, Mom. Tell me what it was about. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
And I had to instruct. We had to instruct the teacher who would give an assignment, and she'd say, "Will the class please turn to page 138 in your math books and do examples 1 through 10?" Everybody in the class. All 30 kids or 25 kids would open up their math and books and do it. My son would sit there doing nothing because he didn't get it. He had an inability to get the information through his ears. Yep. So the teacher had to come over to him, put her hand on his shoulder and say, "Would you take out your math book, please?" And he did it. Mm-hmm. And turn to page 135 or whatever it was. And he did it. And do examples 1 through 10. And he did it.
Right.
So tell us more, Rick, and how
One of the things we train teachers, I mean, some of the simple things we train teachers to do is when you give an instruction to a class, to give it simultaneously, visually and auditorily. So you write it on the board. I want you to do pages 135, problems, and you're writing it and saying it at the same time, and you've got a much better chance of reaching all the kids that way, because the kids who learn through their ears are hearing you say it, and the kids who learn through their eyes are seeing you say it. There are a number of real simple things that can be done, but, you know, talking of your sons, I was doing a radio interview a little while ago, and right at the tail end of the interview, with a minute or so left, this was a live interview on a large radio station, and the interviewer said, "If you could tell the American people one thing about kids, what would that be?" And that's kind of a tough question with no preparation. But what I said was something from one of my books, which is, we need to remember the kids go to school for a living. It's their job. They do it 6 hours a day. And not only that, Ellie, it's their total identity. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're walking through your neighborhood and you bump into an 11-year-old kid you haven't seen for a while, the first thing you say to him is, "Hi, Billy, how's school?" Mm-hmm. You know, now you might be with his dad for 2 hours before you'd ask his dad how things are at work. In our culture, we don't identify adults with what they do for a living, but we identify kids with what they do for a living. So when a kid is failing in school, it impacts their entire identity, as you well know, as a social worker. It impacts their social skills. It impacts their confidence. It impacts their ability to interact with others. So I think one of the things that I know Hillside talks about is that a learning disability isn't just an academic problem. Right. It bleeds over into the social arena, the behavioral arena, and you can understand this young kid is failing at his job 6 hours a day.
Now, we're going to talk more about learning disabilities, how we can motivate our children when we return to Take Charge of Your Life on WDIY.
For program support on WDIY, we thank the National Museum of American Jewish History, now showing the exhibition The Snowy Day and the Art of Ezra Jack Keats. Visitors of all ages can discover more than 80 original sketches, paintings, and collages by the children's book author and illustrator. It also features a reading area for visitors to explore and enjoy the author's books. Tickets are available at the museum, by phone, 215-923-3811, or online at nmajh.org.
Our fall membership drive runs October 11th through the 19th. Once again, you have the opportunity to buy back several on-air pledge days. Visit wdiy.org and make your donation today.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. Hello, this is Eleanor Bobro, your host. And this evening we're talking about the Hillside School for Learning Disabilities, K through 8. And with me this evening are Donna Henry, the head of the Hillside School. And we're also talking with Rick Lavoy, a wonderful motivational speaker who is going to be joining us in the Lehigh Valley. What are the dates, Donna?
He will be presenting Friday, October 11th at ArtsQuest in Bethlehem. And the workshop, you can access the registration form at our website at www.hillsideschool.org. And he will be presenting from 9 until noon.
And Rick is going to be talking about the secrets of turning on the tuned-out child. And I think it's a wonderful topic. And why do you think it's so specially needed for parents at the Hillside School, and really all parents, perhaps, not only the Hillside School?
Right. The topic, really, the beauty of it is it's for anyone who wants to learn ideas and pick up some well-used strategies for increasing motivation. Our students, unfortunately, aren't motivated because they often feel feel defeated.
Don't children need to feel good about themselves?
Yes, they do need to feel good about themselves. And unfortunately, because of a frustrating educational experience, they feel their self-esteem is down. They feel defeated. They don't want to come to school. They have anxiety because learning is so hard for them.
And they feel different because they learn differently.
Right.
So, Rick, how can parents help to change that aspect of their children? We all want to help, but very often we don't know what to do. We might give reward and punishment. If you do your reading assignment, we'll give you some reward. Or how can we help our children become more motivated?
Well, you know, the first part of the workshop we do, we talk about the things that don't work that we use to motivate kids. We use reward and punishment. They simply don't work. Schools, our public schools, are so now into competition, having kids compete against each other, and that doesn't work. In fact, the research shows that the only person motivated by competition is a person who thinks they have a chance of winning. Mm-hmm. So if you're a fourth grade teacher who teaches spelling mm-hmm. by using spelling bees in contests, the only person you're motivating is a good speller. You're not motivating the kid who needs motivation in that area. So we begin by talking about the things that don't work, and then we get into a model that does. But in terms of parents, one of the things that I like to tell parents is it's our job in schools to teach kids how to learn. It's the parents' job to teach kids how to work. There was a major meeting of school psychologists in the Midwest a couple of years ago. They had about 3,000 school psychologists there, and when you put a lot of people like that, as you well know, at a conference, they do a lot of surveys because you've got this captive audience in this hotel of 3,000 psychologists. And they asked the psychologists, what skill set, what's the most important gift that parents can give to their kids? And they expected answers like, you know, kindness and generosity and all. Like, the number one answer was work ethic. Mm-hmm. That if you can teach your kid a good work ethic, and all work ethic means is I take my job seriously, I do it well, and I clean up afterwards. I mean, it doesn't mean working until the sun goes down every day. It just means when I ask you to clean the garage, I want you to take it seriously, I want you to do it well, and I want you to leave it better than you found it. If you think about it, Ellie, every successful person you know has a good work ethic, whether it's a doctor, lawyer, whatever. Every successful person I know has a good work ethic. And that's the most important thing parents can do, is to foster that with kids. There's a chapter in the book, and we'll talk about it, about how to assign chores to kids, and kids should have chores and responsibilities that they have, and that's about the greatest gift they can give. The other thing I talk about extensively is, in terms of motivation, is the way parents handle report cards. Mm. It's really been a huge, you can tell, you'll follow a school bus home on report card day, and you see one kid get off the bus and run to the house waving his report card, and then his brother gets off and, you know, slowly walks like he's walking to the gallows. And it's because we don't handle report cards real well. And one of the things I remind parents is the child's disappointed and upset too. That's not maybe the time to punish, and rather to use the report card as an opportunity to set some goals for the next term and look for patterns. You know, is he doing better with male teachers and female teachers, or is he doing better in afternoon classes than morning classes, and try to find some sort of pattern to it. But parents, I think the most important thing they can do is to be responsive and supportive to the kid. I think it's important to be responsive and supportive of the school. I have tremendous difficulty with parents who are very critical of the school in front of the child. Mm-hmm. I think those are adult issues that need to be settled between adults, and the kid shouldn't be sucked into the conflict. And then handling the child's frustration in a sensitive way. One of the things I tell parents is kids need love most when they deserve it least. You know, and a kid comes home with an offer report card, that's not the time to come down on him with both feet. That might be the time to put your arm around him and say, let's see what we can do to make this better.
And also to find out which are the areas that he's having the difficulty.
Absolutely.
What are the strengths? For example, a child might be doing, got a wonderful mark in music, but he didn't do well in language arts. But maybe that's because he's having difficulty either reading or understanding the information. And having an understanding, and if you don't understand it, get help in understanding how your child learns.
Right. And you know, when that report card does come in, to look at the report card and begin with the positives. We always begin with the negatives. You know, look at the music grade. That's three. Now let's kind of look, and now we got to take a look at your math grade. It's not what we would like it to be, but you know, we begin automatically with the negative. And it's understandable. You know, you're disappointed, you're upset. The child didn't do as well as you would hope they would. And you know, another thing I say to parents is, if you get blindsided by a report card, if you get a report card and you're totally shocked that this kid failed three classes, well, then you need to sit down with somebody at the school,
right?
Because you should have been notified long before a horrible report card that there was some, you know, there were some red flags, and so the waters were pretty rough. And I think that's when parents need to be good consumers and say, you know, we shouldn't have been blindsided by this. We should have been notified that there were problems that we weren't told about.
And I don't think the child, often when I was in teaching in public school with learning disabilities, or the poor child would get the report card and not even understand it. It didn't have any meaning to them. So it's our job, and what we do at Hillside is to have that child take part. They shouldn't be surprised either. You know, they need, when their motivation increases when they understand how they learn, and they're investing into that evaluation of what goes into the report card. We're including executive skills now in our report card system too, so they're learning about what that is and what executive skills they're good at and which ones they're not.
Yeah, and that's another example of Hillside, frankly, being ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are so many schools that just ignore that part of it, what we call executive functioning, the ability for a child to plan and prioritize. And if a child can't plan and prioritize, how can he do his homework?
Right.
You know, he works on math till it gets tough, and then he puts it aside, and then works on the English till it gets tough and puts that aside, and then gets to school realizing he never got back to the math and the English, and he's got four half-finished assignments. And those skills can be taught. You can teach kids how to plan and prioritize, and I'm not surprised to hear it's being done at Hillside.
Then they feel success, and then motivation increases.
Exactly.
So they really need to understand themselves and how they learn and what skills they need to increase. And very often, you know, you gave the example, Rick, of the report card. They become overwhelmed with the failure and not the positive parts of themselves.
Right.
And
right.
So we perhaps as parents need to find other avenues, not only the academic, but what are other avenues? Are they good at art? Are they good
right.
at music? What are they good at to enhance their perception of themselves as positive human beings?
Yeah. You know, my great friend Bob Brooks talks about what he calls islands of competence.
Right.
These kids are drowning, if you will, in a sea of failure, but they do have islands of competence.
Absolutely.
They do have this one strength that, you know, I say to parents, if the only kid, you got an 11-year-old kid, and the only thing he knows how to do is use a Phillips head screwdriver, every Thursday before he gets off the school bus, Ma, you go around and loosen every screw in the house, and as soon as he comes in, give him the screwdriver and say, go to it, because nobody does it as well as you. You need to find those islands of competence, because it's success begets success. It's like, remember in the 70s and 80s when we used to have, I'm sure neither of you ladies are old enough to remember, but when we used to yogurt makers with a big Christmas gift. And the way you made yogurt was the first thing you had to do was put yogurt in the machine to make more yogurt. And that's the way success works. You need to give the kid success before he'll work toward it. You can't use it as a carrot on a stick. If you work hard, you'll get success. You've got to give him some success, and that will make him work harder towards success.
Well, it sounds like this is going to be a very exciting conference, and it's going to be very helpful for parents to come if they have any concern about the way their children are functioning in school. And you don't have to be a parent only of the Hillside School. You can be a parent anywhere who is interested, or a teacher who is interested.
The workshop is designed for parents and for teachers, and I love a mixed audience like that because you really can get some dialogue going around the room. But the schools that have adopted, I'm frankly a little bit overwhelmed by the response to the book, the schools that have adopted the method that we talk about say it's made a tremendous difference in the way their schools run. So it really is a parent-professional conference.
Now, tell us the name of the book so that those people who can't get to the conference might want to read the book. And the book is called?
It's called The Motivation Breakthrough, which if I can very quickly say, I don't like the title of the book. That's what Simon & Schuster chose, and they're the publishers. Mm-hmm. But the title I wanted, frankly, was Batteries Not Included. Then kids don't come with batteries included. It's our job to put the batteries in. And, we've got a generation of educators who are saying basically it's a child's job to come to school with batteries included, and that's not the way kids are put together. You need to put the batteries in.
And that's what the Hillside School tries to do, is give the child the right batteries, because not every machine takes the same battery.
Absolutely.
We have AA batteries, we have D batteries, yeah. A, and that's what Hillside School does. It really helps the child to understand which batteries they need. I think that was an excellent title.
I know it. I wish they had gone with it. They said it needed to be more self-explanatory, and when you write a book, you win some arguments, and they win some arguments, and they won that one.
Well, I want to thank you, Rick Lavoie, for helping us to see that we can develop strategies to increase the self-confidence and motivations of students who may be tuned out, who need to know what batteries they need to use.
Terrific.
Who may be suffering from a lack of self-confidence due to the effect that they learn differently. Thank you to the Hillside School for making it possible for children to be tuned in, more tuned in, rather than tuned out because they have a learning disability. If you want to hear more, you may hear Rick on October 11 from 8:30 a.m. to noon at the Arts Quest Steel Sacks. Registration for the event is available at hillsideschool.org. Thank you, Donna Henry, for presiding over the Hillside School, whose mission is to maximize the potential of children with learning disabilities through excellence in education. Thank you for helping us take charge of our lives.
Thank you, Ellie.
Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.